are live. Boom. Another great episode of Romeo Charlie coming in live to you tonight on all sorts of platforms. Let me take a look up here in the right-hand corner. We got Facebook, YouTube. So everywhere you're probably seeing our smiley faces. Tonight we have an excellent special guest, Gene O'Neill, longtime law enforcement, medical background, all sorts of good stuff. And we are joined again by my excellent co-hosts. We're kind of partner hosts. We got Rick Hogg, Warhog Tactical, and we got Mark Kelly from Kelly Defense. Gentlemen, welcome to Romeo Charlie. Reality.
Yeah, buddy.
Check.
Indeed.
Always good. Always good, Jason.
Yeah, big shout out to Gene for coming on short notice. Really appreciate it, pal.
No worries.
Yeah, no worries.
Hey, what are we talking about tonight? We're talking about tourniquets, stopping bleeding, other good stuff we could have. Let's kind of chat about anything. Let's get right into it. I'm not the expert. About
the Ranger Handbook 88, that's what we're talking about. Which, oh, by the way, the first aid section, weak at best. So
let me get my calculator out here. 2022 minus 1988. 34 years old. Not bad.
Hey, man, that's a collector's piece right there. You know what I'm saying?
It is. And you got the 550 cord on there, too. That's badass.
Oh, got hey, it. Man.
Boom.
Save, you got to have it.
Wait. Those rings would have slowed you down.
it had a big old check it out, man. It had a big old staple in there to go through all them pages. You know, I just think that was probably dummy cord this thing off so I wouldn't lose and get yelled at or something. But,
Gosh.
Anyway.
You know, before the show, we started talking, and we were talking, you know, actually, I was just listening to Rick and Gene talk and sitting back here going, oh, that's pretty cool. But, you know, back in the day, because we're all a little bit older, is tourniquets are kind of like, the past couple generationals. But in the 80s and 90s, you know, when we were going through the system, it was do what you got to do and get it done. It was like, get the belt out, get your shelter half rope. Get anything you do to stop it. And they didn't really tell you that you had to, like, really, really crank down on a son of a bitch. They didn't tell you where to put it. They were just basically saying, hey, you know, put a belt on there, but don't put a belt on there. Because if you do it, you're going to lose a limb. They're going to lose the limb. So let's talk about it, man. Let's talk about the background of this stuff.
I mean, here's the thing. It was an EIB task for us, you know, back in the 80s. And here's the deal. You know, it was... the cravat and Mark helped me out. It was the tent pole and then the tent rope there to kind of tie off the tent pole once you tightened it down. But, here's my thing, Jason, right? They gave us some guidance where it went, right? So if I remember right, a couple inches above or below any joint, stuff like that. And Mark, if I'm off the mark here, chime in. But I remember, I remember doing that. I remember primarily putting them on the legs, not so much on the arms, although you could put it on the arm if need be. But like you said, it was kind of a last resort type deal. It was, hey, man, apply your pressure dressing, do all that stuff. If that doesn't stop the bleeding, then, yeah, we would employ a tourniquet, which isn't what you know a tourniquet of today. It was, like I said, a cravat. I don't know that we ever did the belts because I don't think our belts – well. I don't know if they ever pushed the belts. I can't remember, you know, I could be wrong, but I don't remember the belts. Yeah. I just remember
the
cravat.
The belts were more like a Hollywood thing. It was like, you know,
yeah.
Someone gets shot in the movies, someone's whipping off a belt, and they don't even know what the hell they're doing with it because you can't even crank it down.
Well, the old belts we had, I think, I'm not going to say I'd bet my life on it, but where it had that funny gate on it, I bet you could probably crank it down pretty good. So, I don't know. We'll have to give it a shot next time we're all together.
Hell yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Mark, you're up first.
Now, that's great. The first thing that I remember learning about the tourniquet was in First Blood. Remember when old boy got shot and Brian Dennehy says, yeah, get a tourniquet on it, give me your belt, and did that whole stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you got to release it every 15 minutes and all this other stuff. Yeah, Rick's right. It wasn't a whole lot, but they did give us some stuff. It was above the injury. and they would tighten that down. They didn't really talk about it. They did talk about releasing it. It was every 30 minutes or something like that. Something like that, but it was an EIB task for Rick and I. But there wasn't a whole lot. And then they came out with that combat lifesavers course that the medics would do in the Army. And remember, a lot of us went to that. But, yeah, it's nothing like it is now.
That was all just how to give them an IV.
Yeah. Yeah, find a vein and give it. That's really what it was. Yeah.
Now, Gene, let's go back to the non-military days. And Gene, give everybody like a quick 30,000-foot overview of your background. And then jump into treating gunshot wounds in the medical area, especially your background in Newark, New Jersey, which is a beautiful place to visit.
It is indeed. I'm a federal law enforcement officer these days. Prior to that, I worked in emergency medical services in the Brick City, Newark, New Jersey. Gunshot wounds are prevalent in that community. In the 80s and 90s, when I was there, every unit saw probably at least one gunshot wound a shift if you're rolling on the night shift. So we when you look at what the curriculum was for EMTs in the state of New Jersey, you were trained that if you put a tourniquet on, you had just sacrificed that limb to save a life. And so these things were not prevalent. In fact, in all my practice, I never put a tourniquet on, and that's working the ambulance 40 something hours a week. We did a lot of direct pressure. We did a lot of pressure bandages. We did a lot of backing up pressure bandages with blood pressure cuffs. In the 80s, we were still using the anti-shock trousers, the blow up pants, until we found out that those were killing everybody we put them on, which really was a downer. When you think about it, but so we were so big into that, and the paramedics were very big into fluids. So what we were doing was basically stopping the flow and then filling a half full tank with something that didn't carry oxygen. So we're pumping IV fluid in, and it's just really not, it wasn't doing what we'd hoped. We get great blood pressures back, but these people are not exchanging gases all that well, which is, it's kind of different from the military model. We're closer to definitive care, but it was an almost a taboo subject. If you were going to put a tourniquet on, you're probably going to be writing for a little while if you put a tourniquet on.
When did it change? When did it change to be like, okay, the tourniquets are like, now everybody's going to use a tourniquet and everybody's going to get one, cat, this, that, and everything else. Let's go from the military and law enforcement perspective. I guess Rick would probably know a lot about the military aspect.
Yeah. So Mogadishu, you got to think, the Battle of October 3rd, 1993, Battle of the Black Sea, Black Hawk Down, as some people might know. The biggest thing that came out of that battle was, casualty care under fire. And again, you had a lot amount of guys that were wounded. And again, that's where really the whole premise for the tourniquets came about. How do we change business? How do we, put more things to casualty care under fire? Because again, you're not 20 minutes from the hospital or 10 minutes from the hospital. The ambulance isn't zipping in to pick you up. What if you're shot at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and, hey man, you're not getting out till the next day. So how do you do that? And again, there was just some, like Gene was saying, thinking that, okay, if we get fluids on board, you're keeping fluids in, but again, you're not getting that oxygen transfer like you're talking about. So a lot of myths debunked, a lot of hot washing after that specific battle, and a lot of just taking a step back going, all right, what do we need to do to better prepare, for the next engagement where you're going to have a mass casualty type situation. And that's really where you started seeing, all right, kind of we need to do something, i.e. tourniquet wise. And I think the myth of the whole tourniquet thing, hey, if you put one on, you're going to die and all this other stuff, was kind of debunked some, where, hey, you've got to do something to stop this bleeding and keep guys alive. So that to me, Jason, was really a major change, pivotal point within the military, at least start the conversations having, start looking down the road. And I mean, to me, military military trauma medicine has come leaps and bounds, and some of the things we're doing out on the battlefield is absolutely amazing. So I'll pause there and let everyone else chime in.
I saw that mute button. Mark, you got to talk now, man. You are on the spot.
Yeah, the law enforcement side of the house, just like you said, Jason, just recently truly embraced it and implemented it in our department and around the Midwest. And that was due to the success that it was having and the knowledge that was being learned on the battlefield. And I can tell you right now, those things are going on whenever, even if it's a question, it goes on. And we're seeing a great deal of success. People are taking to it. It's easy to use with some of the products that they have out there. And with a couple of the mass incidents that we had where there was casualties, there's no way in the world had that occurred prior to the implementation of these devices that that person that specifically I'm referring to would have made it. There's absolutely no way. So yeah, directly from, like Rick said, the success and the knowledge that they learned on the battlefield is where law enforcement really, you know, took a hold of it. They're using them too a lot.
It's gone beyond just law enforcement and military. Now we have the civilian sector. And, you know, Dan put a comment up here, says, I carry rats every day. I know those aren't preferred, but I have a bunch of littles that most of the other tourniquets won't work with. And that's the thing is, like, let's talk.
I got to chime in. So, Dan, keep your rats. Listen to this. All this other crap people are going to tell you out there. Oh, that don't work, or don't use that, or it's not TCCC, yada, yada, yada. You know what? Don't listen to that rubbish. Because here's the thing. This is Rick's opinion. There's people out there giving you medical advice based on how much money they're putting in their pocketbook. All right? So cool. You're carrying rats because you got little ones. And I got it. You got to put a couple more wraps in there and stuff like that. You know what? If it works, it works. I don't care if you grab a ratchet strap, and we were kind of talking about this post. Okay? Who's going to bust me or give me any type of grief if all I have is a ratchet strap, I put it on somebody and save their life, or I use my shirt or a stick or a pen or whatever, right? Rick's going to vent here for a little bit. Last time I checked, the tourniquet market is a $75 million market, which is cool. But are people actually telling you, hey, this is validated, this isn't? And I get it. You don't want to buy crap because, yes, you can get suckered down the road of, hey, this tourniquet does something. But if you're buying a quality brand tourniquet, preferably not made in China, so all your stitching blows out, you know what? Run with it. But here's the thing. We can't get wrapped around the mechanical tool. So, yes, I've got a cat here carrying around. Sure. Check it out. If need be, I can whip out, you know, the old stick and cravat like me and Mark were talking about earlier and put an improvised tourniquet on. I think that's what we need to be talking about. How do you put on an improvised tourniquet with what you have and then go from there? So that was Rick's on the soapbox reference tourniquets.
One of the most important things you discussed there was quality brand. Right. Mm-hmm. And the fact that we're dealing with, which I didn't realize until 10 minutes ago, we're dealing with a $75 million a year business or businesses. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's a lot of trade. Where there's a lot of trade, there's a lot of imitation. Where there's a lot of imitation, you're getting knockoff stuff. Mm-hmm. If so, the thing here for Dan is good for you. You've got rats tourniquets. You probably bought them from the manufacturer or a reputable distributor. If people are buying this high-speed gear and they're buying it off Amazon or they're buying it off Wish.com, that's going to fail. It's going to fail you at a critical moment. And it doesn't matter what you're carrying as long as you're carrying stuff that you vetted.
Mm-hmm. And Gene, on that, let me chime in for one sec. You know, here's the thing that, and we'll just throw cat because that's kind of the standard, for lack of better terms, right? Like you said, if your cat is costing you $9, you're probably getting a hokey one. Now, here's what I'm going to say. I don't have a problem with guys buying the Hokey one, providing they market appropriately, and that becomes their training tourniquet. You know, so if they want to use that or whatever, but just make sure it's marked in a way that you know, hey, man, if I no kid and crank this thing, the windlass is probably going to pop, the stitching is going to go, the Velcro is not going to hold, or whatever else you've got. But if you want to work your procedures through that, I personally don't see a problem with that. That's just Rick speaking.
No, I think that's a great point, Rick, is a lot of times these guys, you know, folks go out there and good for them. They learn how to use it. They buy one, but they don't have one for training. Mm-hmm. You know, they keep it to where they know it's going to be there when they need it, but they don't have a training aid that functions the exact same way. Great point.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like the point that you brought up is training. You can go out and buy these things, but if you don't train with them, hey, we know the reality. Not everybody's law enforcement, not everybody's military, not everybody's used these things before, not everybody's practiced with them. So where do we go to learn? I mean, there's instructions on the back and you're like,
Well, hang on a second, Jason. There's instructions that usually come with it. However, you have to remove the plastic from it, right?
Step one, so remove plastic.
That's the key thing is, and again, not to bust my LEOs, and I'm sure there's some military guys as well, but don't carry this thing with the plastic on it. No. Have it where you can access it. Size it. If you don't know what we're talking about, size, and we'll chat about that later on, but have it sized to you, because here's the thing. This is mine, right? And I'm going to be greedy for a minute. This is my tourniquet to save me. If I opt to give it away, that's my personal choice. I have to understand if I end up needing it, I can't whip it off so-and-so to get it back. So yeah, I want it sized to me. But yeah.
Yeah. The training piece, Jason, that's another great point. There's all kinds of programs out there. Stop the Bleed. You know, everybody's heard that and some of the others. If you go to a trauma center, a true trauma center, they're going to have programs coming out like our university hospital real close to where we are. They offer it for free all the time. And those ER trauma nurses and physicians, they're unbelievable. And they love to come out and teach it. Nine times out of 10 that I've ever looked, it was free and they were able to come out right away. They didn't care if it was two people or if it was 20. And they had all the training aids and everything that they needed. And they do a quality program. It's not just the Stop the Bleed program. There's all kinds of them out there. You just got to do a little bit of research. So check with the trauma ERs.
Free. Yeah. You know, I didn't even think about that because I'm so used to looking for training that you have to pay for. And sometimes, you know, it's out of my locality. I never even thought about going like they want to train. They want to train you to save someone's life because they would rather. And I forgot that some people actually care and they want to train you for free. I like it.
I think the Red Cross has, you know, different first aid classes they do for free as well or at low costs. But yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of stuff out there.
Here's a question, and it's not really a question. It's just a comment from my favorite follower saying, I keep giant zip ties in my hiking pack. What about zip ties for tourniquets? Like, you know, those massive ones?
Here's the thing. There's some things to think about, right? You can use whatever. For those of us that have actually put tourniquets on people, they don't like it. You will not be their favorite person, right? The thing when you look at, you know, your average zip tie, what's it, maybe half an inch, quarter of an inch, even the big ones, right? So when you look at something like the Cat, you know, you've got probably a couple inches of material there that you're trying to disperse over that limb. Man, how many of these bad boys you gonna have to crank on there? Now you have to think, granted, you have to give the hospital an interesting situation. They typically have their NASCAR toolboxes in there, but now they got to find some wire cutters or something to get that thing off. I personally, if it were me, this is just Rick. I wouldn't carry zip ties. Now, granted, zip ties are cool if you want to repair your gear and stuff like that. That would not be my thinking for a tourniquet. I would, no kidding, if it were me, I'm carrying an old cravat because that's what I know. And you guys go Google 80s or 90s U.S. Army tourniquet training, you'll see how to put the old tourniquet on there. It's really not that hard. That would be what I would use. So just Rick's two cents on that one.
I mean, it's there's no lack of training out there. You've got stopthebleed.org, which will point you in the right direction in your community, anywhere in the nation. Many of the law enforcement academies are embracing or have embraced this. Having that standby, knowing, as Rick said, knowing that your equipment could fail, and it is very hard to get lower in technology than a cravat and a piece of PVC. You're just never going to beat that. Mm-hmm. It's a low tech solution to a high tech problem.
Yeah, and Rick makes a great point. It's like something is better than nothing, obviously, but if you're already thinking about stuff that you have in your kit that you could use for a tourniquet, just go out and get a tourniquet, right?
Yeah.
You could always use those things for secondary injuries, but yeah.
Well, you know, I think it'd be kind of cool to learn how to use those things. Well, first off, learn how to use your tourniquet. Take the plastic off, step one. Learn how to use it. And then step two, look into other ways to stop the bleed. I like this going to – I just went to the stopthebleed.org website. I post a comment below if you guys want to check that out. But the thing is, too, is to practice. Now, I like the idea of every time I go to the range to, you know, just throw it, practice it. Practice on myself. I have my kids do it, this and that. Just throw it in there. But start working scenarios, start working things. And like Rick said, you have one for yourself. Are you carrying multiple tourniquets? Not on your body, but in your vehicle, in your house. You know where they're at. And are you going to know where they're at when you're stressed out and blood is spurting?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because time's not on your side when it comes to that. Go ahead, buddy.
No, you're on it. I mean, that's the key thing is are you habitually carrying, right? And, you know, a bunch of people say, yeah, that's part of my EDC. And I go, okay, that's cool. But again, that's a big hunk of real estate, right?
Yeah.
You know, and where are you sticking it at? Yeah, stick it in your pocket, stick it on your belt, stick it wherever, you know. I mean, would you like to sit there and say, hey, I always have one? Yeah. Would it be on your person? May or may not. You know, it just depends. You got to look at your lifestyle. Maybe you're sitting there, you know, carrying some type of bag or satchel or whatever, and maybe it's in there. I mean, I don't know, but pick a spot. I will tell you this. These bad boys are TSA friendly because I fly with mine all the time. And, you know, waiting for the day where somebody goes, oh, you can't have that on here. I said, oh, Johnny Law, listen here. Let's have a conversation. Bring your supervisor out, you know. But
Johnny Law,
that's it, man. Then I don't even know if I classify him Johnny Law, you know, but, thinking of the name for TSA, but Johnny, dumbass.
Being that you still have to fly. Let's talk about it after the broadcast.
Yeah.
those guys, man, it don't matter because they can't get their act together from one airport to another. So change the rules as they go and everything else. But at least the major ones I've been flying, nobody said anything. So I don't know. I'm surprised they haven't said, oh, look at here. You've got that piece of plastic on there. Oh, we can't be doing that. But
Keith says, I still carry cravats in my kit, not only for improvised TQs, but also for securing wounded or broken limbs and as padding if needed.
Yeah, buddy.
Nice.
So Keith is old school, man. Dude, our cravats.
Dude. I have some around here, man.
Dude, we did all kinds of craziness with those things. I mean, that was
Rick. I see you. You know, the first time you got in GWAT, and we're not talking like, you know, we're not talking about the Operation Desert Storm. We're talking about you in GWAT when you got that cravat wrapped around your head. You know you did it. You know you did it. Come on, you're like, hey, Taliban, look at me.
I wish I did in the GWAT. I wish I could have those bragging rights, but you know.
I know you and Mark did that in Desert Storm.
We did in the storm. Yeah, in the storm, man. You know?
Forget about it.
I mean.
Yeah, if you didn't do that.
You don't understand what the storm was like.
Oof, I know. Starch. I've heard, man. I was away for a couple months. I like it. You know, it's camels. Camels are cool.
It's all funny games. They spit in your eye. Oh.
You gotta stay away from those camels, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you brought up the Red Cross too, Rick. I mean, they have all kinds of stuff. You know, they do the CPR stuff. you know, the choking and all that. That's all good stuff. I think those are things that you should really have to push into your kids, that when they start to have kids, hey man, you know, just like you got to learn to swim. If you can't save yourself, you're certainly not going to be able to save your kid. Same. It's just all that first aid stuff is so easy to learn and it's so easy to keep up. Like you said, they got a website, and I tell you, 9 times out of 10, that the stuff that I've looked for and scheduled have been free. So seek that stuff out. And what a great thing that you have when you need it. To tell a story here, I actually, my oldest daughter, actually, when she was very, very young, she was walking, I had to clear an obstruction from her when she was eating. And we were all, we were out at the farm, and we were a long way away from help. And the only thing that helped was the fact that I'd gone through that Red Cross stuff as part of my job and saved her life. Sure as heck did. So it's not a bad thing to do ever.
But Mark, you actually did some hands-on with that, right? Granted, you might not have done the full Heimlich, but they make you do hands-on. I think that's the key part.
Yeah, you get a partner. They have the Annie dolls and all that stuff.
Find the little belly button with your thumb. Well,
let's ask Gene a little bit about this medical stuff.
Sure.
Talk.
I'm not sure where we're at with this. The training piece is without a doubt. It's and as Rick brought up, as Mark mentioned, it needs to be hands-on. If you're getting your tourniquet training from YouTube, you've got some good ideas, but you have no application for it. You may have put one on yourself, or you may have put one on an unwitting victim in your home, but you're not really learning. You're not getting those reps in, right? Because what goes away when the stress level goes, when the cortisol really starts to flow, what goes away? And that's reasoning. And if you haven't done this dozens and dozens of times in training, you can't hope to perform it under pressure. It's really key. I mean, you look at the cravat. We've talked about the cravat multiple times. That's a 99-cent item at any medical supply. 99 cents. If you get the cool green ones and you get yourself some, like make yourself like a Pat McNamara loincloth, you're always carrying one. I mean, that guy's walking around. If he's got a gun on, he's got a cravat with him. He's just made it part of his kit. It's pleasing to watch, actually.
But that's the old school tourniquet right there. I mean,
right there.
That's the beauty. And I think that's the part. And again, I'm not telling guys don't go out and buy commercially made tourniquets, but at the same token, don't get so wrapped around that's your only option. And I think that's where we've kind of seen the market go. The whole essence of talking improvised, if you even want to say improvised, because back in the day that was the tourniquet. It wasn't improvised, right? So it wasn't until we had something commercially made that now we go, hey, the old stick and cravat is improvised. But that's the part I think people need to look at is, hey, can you actually find a material? You know, heck, what if you just take your shirt off, you know, kind of fold it up in about a 2-inch roll, wrap around and crank it? You're going to get the same results. You know, there's only one way to find out. Try it. And I think that's the key part people need to do is just, you know, try the belt thing, that the belt that you normally carry. Can you actually cinch it down? I mean, so don't fall for all the Hollywood stuff. Just kind of got to do some trial and error if that's what you're going to do. But then again, don't pull off your belt and then you lose your pistol and you got all kinds of dramas going on.
Well, you know, one thing I've seen too is I've seen a lot of cops are wearing the ankle holsters. So you can, you know, when you're in uniform, stuff like that, it just becomes part of your everyday carry. That is realistic. But me rolling around with, like, you know, my flip-flops and shorts and all that, I'm probably not going to have a tourniquet on, so I'm probably going to have to learn how to stop the bleed some other way. So it's a great idea about, like, shirts, belts, anything you could find. Really crank down on that son of a bitch hard.
Yeah.
Get it around the limb.
And the thing is, this is the other part people need to understand. Tourniquets do not feel nice. Right? When you're actually putting one on to save somebody's life, they are not going to like you.
They are not.
They're going to hoop. They're going to holler. They're probably going to fight you, depending what state they're in. You know, hey, man, you got to sit there and crank that thing till that bleeding stops. And that's the biggest thing people need to understand. Whether it's you, them, I mean, think about it. It's cool to put it on yourself. But, man, you got to crank that thing down. And it's not natural for us, unless you're sitting there out going kicking your ass in the gym, to cause that natural pain to yourself. But people need to understand, man, it's going to hurt. And typically what do we do when things hurt? We stop. So you may or may not stop the bleeding.
In every training event that I've been to involving tourniquets, the tightening stops when the screaming starts. Mm-hmm. And I think that leaves a terrible training scar.
Absolutely.
Go ahead, Rick.
No, I was just saying it's a hard thing to duplicate, to crank that thing down and have bleeding stop. So unless you've got certain contraptions, we'll just leave it at that, to actually see the bleeding stop, you're not getting that full effect.
Now, Gene, when you're working the trauma area and you're working with gunshot wounds and stuff like that, what's the common procedure? I mean, we're not talking tourniquets now, or are we talking tourniquets? How are you stopping a bleed?
I can tell you, when I was in practice in the 80s and 90s, we were doing direct pressure. We were doing, and we were doubling up on direct pressure. Manufactured chest seals were actually probably in the early 90s after Desert Storm. If you had a buddy who was in the Navy, he could probably get you a manufactured chest seal. But up until that, we're using tinfoil. It's direct pressure. The long and the short of it is, in pre-hospital medicine, nothing anyone does in the field beyond secure an airway is going to save your life. What saves your life is timely delivery to the point of definitive care. Hot lights and cold steel and a skilled surgeon wins the day every time. So what we do and what we did was buy time to get people to that trauma center. But we were, you know, we're still using elevation. We're still using direct pressure. On a bad one, if you were willing to sacrifice a blood pressure cuff to the bloodborne pathogen gods, you could put a bandage on and then slap the bladder on over that, crank up on the blood on the blood pressure cuff. There are, you know, there's a million dirty little tricks. But the one that works the best is take them to somebody who can fix the problem. Mm-hmm. You know, stay in play is definitely not the order of the day.
But Gene, you brought up some great points, right? And this is where I think, for those of us that were in the military in the 80s and 90s, they kind of taught us how to do, more with less. So you talk about the chest seal. So I can remember for us, hey, if you had some piece of plastic, you'd slap it on there. And typically that plastic was coming off your pressure dressing. You could use that for an improvised chest. But if you're really high speed, you had the petroleum gauze and you took off the petroleum gauze, right? One on one side, one on the other, a little bit of tape on there, leave the corner so you can burp or do whatever. But I mean, it was, we could call it improvised medicine today because we've got these, let's just say, devices. But dude, that was kind of modern medicine back there. And I think that's the key part. Is people just need to go back and not get so wrapped around, well, what if I don't have X? Okay, cool. You don't have it. There, you got plenty of other stuff around that you can potentially save this guy's life with. So
I think people get caught up in what's modern. Mm-hmm. And that gets dangerous. When you think about it at its most basic form, CPR hasn't changed since its invention all that much. The ratios to compressions to blowing in the face have changed, but it's still pressing on the chest and blowing in the lungs. Mm-hmm. And we're perfectly happy with that. Mm-hmm. We should be able to apply that across the board rationally. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. You said a good word there, rationally. Rational. Just be rational. And don't think you have to go. And I like the idea that I think it was Mark that said before, or Rick, about going to Amazon and buying something. You never know what you're getting on Amazon. So vet your sources. And if you have any sources that you're using that are pretty vetted, drop them in the comments. We'll take a look at them. I can see the Rick Hogg cravat tactical system coming out soon. It could be also used as a bandana, a pressure dressing, and tourniquet. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be. It's not going to be like the old cravats. It's going to be a little bit different colors.
No, because it'll have the Warhog. It'll have the Warhog logo on there.
You're right. You'll have a logo on it.
Yeah. Of course.
Yeah.
And with any good piece of medical equipment, right? And I think even check your tourniquets, right? Because I think they might have them on there. I won't say so much the tourniquets, but I know definitely like Curlex does, right? Curlex, just some gauze material, has an expiration date, whatever. But if it's a piece of medical equipment, I'll have to put an expiration date so that, you know, people have to buy new ones that are in date. So,
yeah.
Well, I do want to take a pause there, and I do want to do a little self-promotion. If everybody out there has not checked out the On the Range podcast or the Protectors podcast, On the Range podcast hosts Rick and Mark have awesome conversations with guests, and well, they also have conversations with themselves about Desert Storm. But outside of that, no, they do. They have a really great podcast. I enjoy being on it. I haven't been invited back on since the last time. I don't know if it's something I said. I don't know. But everybody, make sure you check out their podcast. And also, I have the Protectors podcast, where I interview great guests like the three gentlemen right here. And we do have a special guest dropping, what did I say, this Friday? Mark Kelly on the Protectors podcast, episode 349. Nice. All right.
So Jason, what one could ask, you know, you're like, you haven't been back. Well, how come I haven't been back on yours? Was it something I said?
Well, yes. Yes. I didn't want to get into it in public, but yeah.
Yeah. Not, we don't not air our dirty laundry in public, yeah.
Not that I see you once a week or anything, but you know.
Yeah, no, not like we're doing the show right now today. So when I was putting up, I was getting ready to publish this episode with Mark, and I'm like, did I publish that one? I'm like, I don't even remember when I interviewed you, and I'm like, whoa, I see you every week. It's like, it's going to be like a special.
All right.
What do you guys got? What's your next show about?
So we're trying to get a guest on. I'll be honest with you. We're trying to get Aaron Quinn from over at Cobalt Kinetics.
Oh yeah, that's right.
The problem is, he's out. Where's he at? In Arizona or somewhere? He's like, if I can get a computer, I'll jump on. But he's out on the road, doing his stuff. So. The thing is, I want to get Aaron on talk about Cobalt, because the thing that impresses me with those guys is they're not happy at status quo. How can we make this thing better and better and better? And probably out of almost anybody I've worked with in industry that I can think of, Aaron is super receptive to pretty much all the things I've been kind of telling him I would tweak and adjust on that rifle. So, just want to get him on board, you know, if he's got the time, and just talk about that whole process. It's almost like you can never get, and I want to take the words from his mouth, and I don't know if his perfection is the right deal, but you're never done, because there's always something that can be improving. So that's the key part. And it kind of falls right into, hey, 1% better each and every day. Is he drastically changing the AR platform? The principle of, you know, what Eugene Stoner came up with? No. But it's, how do you make it better? How do you improve the design? How do you take things out that are potentially flaw points that don't have to be? How do you sit there and look for the best stuff out on the market? And that's really the conversation we want to have, is go down there. So if he's available, we'll have him on. If not, me and Mark, I'm sure, can pick all kinds of stuff to talk on, because we're just in interesting times right now that needs some chatting.
Oh, yeah.
And need to be able to have some free speech and some reasonable thinking, because it's kind of like
the tourniquet. Reasonable.
It's kind of like the tourniquet thing, right? We're not reasonable to sit there and go, hey, I need this contraption. If you got it, cool, don't get me wrong, and I'm not downplaying it, but don't think you can't apply one without having one. So,
yeah.
Very cool. Yeah. Well, gentlemen, I think we're going to have an early night tonight. So rule number one is we got to learn how to use a tourniquet. Stop the Bleed doesn't necessarily have a course near you. I think Dan said he found a course, but it seems a pretty in-depth course. But then there's not courses within 100 miles by Dan. Mm-hmm. So there's not just a basic Stop the Bleed. I took a look. I got one about 15 miles from me. It's a basic Stop the Bleed for $20. I'd like to bring my kids. That's another thing. Mm-hmm. Is maybe bring the family. Maybe you're not the primary. Maybe you mm-hmm. teach other people how to use the tourniquet.
Yeah. And to Dan's point, excuse me, call your local EMS or your local fire department.
I like that.
You know, yeah. take a swing down, because here's the thing, man. Those guys enjoy what they do. They enjoy sharing that knowledge. And I guarantee you roll up to a firehouse, you call the EMS guys, you know, and go, hey, man, can you show me how to use one of these tourniquets?
Boom. Yeah. Or set up something local. You know what I mean? Set up something local in a community center of some kind. Ask the fire department to get involved. I guarantee it wouldn't take much time to build some traction for that. And you talk about a game changer. A game changer.
Yeah, because you're helping.
You know what? I think that's going to be a protector's thing. I'm gonna do that for my neighborhood. You know, most neighborhoods nowadays have neighborhood watches. Why don't we do like a, hey, you know what? We're going to do a quick Stop the Bleed course. Everybody bring your family and friends and make sure you sign up and do it. I think that's a great idea.
The challenge for me is I'm the guy they're watching.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Well, gentlemen, I appreciate you all coming on. Anything else you guys want to talk about? We got some training courses coming up.
Yeah, just go to warhog.com and kellydefense.com. Check out our calendars. Make sure you go to jasonpiccolo.us. Check out his stuff. Protectors.us. Yeah.
Oh, the same. You can go to jasonpiccolo.us too.
Yeah.
Man, you got two, Jason? That's double dipping? Whew. Dude.
Yeah, I got all sorts of stuff. One's for the podcast.
When you're a major cable star, major network star, you get to have two.
I do want to direct everybody head over to I just started posting my journal on Substack. If you go to my IG, you can find it. I will be talking my way into getting into shape and be holding myself accountable.
He's crushing it out there.
Trying, brother.
He's crushing it, man.
And it's funny, Jason, because I'm gonna side shift here just for a quick second, because this whole fitness thing kind of coming around, and I know you had some stuff go on that really picked up steam and driving your way. And dude, I got to tell you, my hat's off to you. So
yep,
thanks, brother.
And here's the thing. Let's just say for us, more experienced individuals that are here on this planet,
experienced.
Yeah,
tenured.
Yeah, tenured. You know, I'm sitting there. I'm sitting there going, dude, we're doing more than some of these young bucks out there.
Yeah.
And, we got a couple Warhog words of wisdom coming up to talk about my latest trip and just the airport experience, that just kind of brought some things to light. But I just look at my fellow Americans and I'm like, guys, put some effort forward to add to your longevity. And for me, brother, you've been out there. Yeah. You're out there crushing it, man. I think we just say it doesn't have to look pretty. It just has to get done.
It doesn't have to be perfect, and it doesn't have to be pretty. Just got to do it.
Yeah.
Hey, I tell people, just walk to the door. Walk to the door. Get off the couch. If you can't walk, the fuel you're putting in your body, you could change it. You don't have to eat donuts. You don't have to eat a whole loaf of bread.
I wouldn't call that fuel, brother. I wouldn't. That's freaking poison, right? Yeah. You sucking down all that cola. You might as well just be sticking a needle of freaking antifreeze in your arm.
Cola. 215 days till I'm 50. There we go. A little younger than you guys. I mean, you guys are.
I'm only 29.
29 years, Special Operations Forces, recon. Gene, what do you got for us? I do want to thank Gene so much for coming on tonight.
Yeah, yeah, buddy. It was great having you on.
It was a pleasure to be here. 50 isn't that bad. If you did your PM on the front end, the check everything light doesn't come on at 50. So make sure you're doing your PM on the front end. This has been an absolute joy to participate in, and I appreciate the time and attention.
Thanks for being on, buddy.
Thanks, buddy.
Everybody,
thanks for
out
your
there.
Service, pal.
Yeah, thank you, Gene. Thanks for doing all you're doing, and see you on the dark side. No, I'm just kidding.
All right,
everybody out there, make sure you tune in. We'll come up with a new topic for next week. Something interesting. We'll talk about it. But everybody, thank you again for joining us, and make sure to follow the podcast, follow the show, and thank you so much for your support. That's the biggest thing. I don't care if it's one viewer or 10 viewers, whatever. Also, Mark did say he did pull up his tourniquet. Make sure you're training and pick one up. If you can't pick one up, find something that can become a tourniquet you can train with. Thanks, everybody.
Be safe, guys.